You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly welcoming you on board to this special Formula One summer break edition. It's been a quiet summer here so far for me, but I have been able to take a little bit of time off of work every now and again to enjoy the, well, I wouldn't say the summer weather here on the west coast of Canada. It's been a little bit wet and damper than usual and cooler than usual, I might add, but still we've had some nice warm summer days every now and again, and hey, it's just nice to get a little bit of free time and get away from work, even if it's just for a couple of days. And we're still a couple of weeks away from the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps. And as normal for this time of year, the news tends to get a little bit quiet and the stories tend to spread out a little bit more than usual. But we can circle back and talk about what's happened over the course of the first half of the Formula One season. Well, actually, it's more than halfway. We've got 12 races under our belts. So that means we're actually on the downside of the Formula One season once we get back to racing here. But still, it's going to be a long ride until we get to Abu Dhabi at the end of November, and then we really head into the dark time of the year. It really is quiet, and I miss Formula One, as I'm sure every one of you does as well, once we go into the off-season, into the winter, and, well, let's not think about that too much. But anyways, like I was saying, I think that this is the perfect time of the year just to rehash the first dozen races of the year, and maybe just go back and go over some of what were some talking points. Maybe not all the stories are included here, but these are 10 stories or talking points that I thought really stood out for me in the first half of the year. And if you want to add to the conversation, by all means do so. Send me a tweet at ScuderiaF1Pod or send me an email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. So in no particular order, but we're going to start with Mercedes because they've been making the headlines for all the right or wrong reasons if you're not a Mercedes fan. But still, it's been another dominant year for the Silver Arrows. And let's start right at the top. Let's start with our number one talking point, and that is number 44, Lewis Hamilton, still on track for World Championship number 6. And it really has been an impressive start to the year for Lewis. He's won 8 out of 12 races. His lowest classification this year was at the German Grand Prix at Hockenheim a couple of weeks ago, but that was a wet and crazy and completely bizarre race, and whoever expects to see Lewis Hamilton have an excursion off the track, well, certainly I don't, and I'm sure none of you do either, but what with the crazy rain and everything that went on there. Lewis went off not once, but twice, and eventually brought it home in 9th. But still, Lewis is way out in front, and this is basically all but a formality now over the remaining races, starting at Belgium and then wrapping up at Abu Dhabi. He has 250 points, and that is miles ahead of his teammate, Valtteri Bottas, who has 188, and Max Verstappen throwing in a really solid performance in the first dozen races of the year with 2 wins himself. We'll talk about Max in a minute. And he has 181 points, but can anybody really catch Lewis apart from that really bizarre German Grand Prix? I mean, 9th is an outlier. And then Austria was another bit of an off weekend for Lewis, where he came 5th. The rest of the time, his lowest classification, his lowest finish of the year was 2nd, which he recorded twice in Austria. Sorry, not in Austria, but in Australia and also in Azerbaijan. And it is still impressive to see what Lewis Hamilton is doing. And he can really throw it down and really do some impressive things whenever hammer time is the order of the day. Certainly we saw that at the Hungarian Grand Prix just the other week at the end of the race, when he went in for an unplanned second pit stop, put on the soft tires, and then just really took huge chunks out of Max Verstappen's 20-second lead or whatever it was. And he's been absolutely dominant at times this year and provided some really exciting moments. And he really is making a good case to really knock down more of these outstanding records that he wants to maybe put a claim to. The big one, of course, will be that seventh world championship. And if he can get the sixth this year, then he's only got Michael Schumacher to catch. And once you get to seven, you got to think Lewis is going to want to go and get eight. And, it certainly is within the realm of possibility. And if he can stay on top of the form that he's been able to deliver almost like clockwork year in, year out, and have a good car, and who's to say that if he stays with Mercedes, and of course, why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't Mercedes deliver a car? I mean, a good car, that is, because since the dawn of the turbo hybrid era here in Formula One way back in 2014, it's been all Mercedes. It really has been no one else. And what they have done over the past several years has been absolutely astonishing. Anyways, moving on to point number two, Mercedes dominant again. So this is a little bit of a continuation of the first talking point. But if you look at what's happened this year, out of 12 races so far, Mercedes have won 10. So 8 for Lewis, 2 for Valtteri Bottas, and the remaining 2 have been won by Max Verstappen. And really, it has been, they've been a class of their own at times, and just they've been untouchable. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that there's been a bit of a vacuum in the order, in the power rankings, whatever you want to call them in Formula One. Ferrari have not been able to deliver a good car this year in the SF90. They just have not been able to stay competitive and stay with Mercedes. And they've been on a decline, and they've just been dropping further and further back, slowly but surely, ever since about this time last year. Because if you remember, when we went into the summer break last year, it was pretty much a dead heat between Sebastian Vettel of Ferrari and Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes. But since the untimely death of Sergio Marchionne, whatever impact that may have had on Ferrari, it certainly has been, I would say, a benchmark, a milestone moment, because unfortunately around and in that time, whether or not that had a direct effect on the Formula One team or not, it did coincide with the slow decline. And it really has, like I say, created a bit of a vacuum in the power rankings, in the order of Formula One. Red Bull and Honda have been able to step up in a little ways, but in the meantime, with nobody to challenge them, it's been all Mercedes. And it was quite ominous right from the very first race of the year, if you want to call it that. But you had Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas just racing away in Australia. And actually, it was Valtteri Bottas who was that much quicker than Lewis Hamilton, which was quite impressive. And they just went through switching back between the first five races of the year. It was either one or the other winning those races. Bottas won two races in Australia and Azerbaijan, and then Lewis winning in Bahrain, China, Spain, Montreal, Canada, France, Great Britain, and Hungary. But certainly through those first five races of the year, it was really just between the two of them. The only difference being there, when by the time Formula One got to Canada, it was Sebastian Vettel who managed to split the silver arrows. And of course, we've had that discussion here on the show, whether or not that was a just time penalty that was awarded to Sebastian Vettel. And that's kind of aside. I mean, at the end of the day, Lewis was given the checkered flag there after it was all said and done, as he got again a Paul Ricard, and then of course in Great Britain and Hungary. And if you look at the constructors championship, Mercedes just miles and miles ahead, 438 points in the constructors, 288 for Ferrari in second place, and Red Bull slowly but surely creeping up, thanks mostly to Max Verstappen with 244 points combined between himself and his former partner Pierre Gasly. And you have to wonder whether if Gasly would have been able to step it up in the first dozen races of the year had Red Bull been able to overtake Ferrari. But that's a bit of a different take. Anyways, again, we look. It looks almost a certainty that Mercedes are going to be odds-on favorites to win both the Drivers' and Constructors' Championship this year. What with these the leads that Lewis Hamilton and the team have in both the championships, it would have to be a meltdown of monumental proportions. And honestly, I don't think anyone would seriously see that happening to a team that has got such a massive budget, a talent and dedication, the desire to win as a Mercedes. I don't think any of us can see that happening. Okay, the third talking point is the emergence of Charles Leclerc as a very, very good top Formula One driver, but Ferrari have struggled. Okay, I think we all knew in the debut that we saw last year with Charles Leclerc at Sauber Alfa Romeo, or whatever they called themselves last year, and now Alfa Romeo this year. But anyways, Charles did an excellent job in his debut season in Formula One, and really being promoted, because I mean, basically Alfa or Sauber, as it was last year, is a Ferrari feeder team, having Ferrari engines, and there have been some people with senior people or people with very senior ties to Ferrari or have worked at Ferrari have found their way to Sauber or Alfa Romeo over the past year or two. And of course, Kimi Raikkonen is a driver there this year after several years at Ferrari and a couple of stints. And of course, won his one and only world championship at the Scuderia. But yeah, it really has been a continuation of what was a very impressive rookie campaign from Charles. He currently sits fifth in the world championship with 132 points, which is basically double Pierre Gasly, who currently sits sixth. So, I mean, excuse me, a bit of work for Charles to do. I mean, he's slowly but surely catching Sebastian Vettel. I mean, he's had a number of podiums. He's had four third places. He's had a second place and only a couple of retirements. One was in Germany. And, well, I mean, after all the retirements that we saw from different drivers for different reasons, mostly because of accidents, Charles was not in solitary. He wasn't all alone, I should say. Unfortunately, he did put it off the track, but so did Bottas, so did Lewis Hamilton, so did a number of other guys. And the other one that he had was in Monaco, his home race, which was just a miserable, miserable time. But I mean, we've seen some good races from him. We have seen a little bit of unfortunate team orders, which was evident right from the very start of the year when he was clearly quicker than Sebastian Vettel in Melbourne at the Australian Grand Prix, but just had to hold station, ended up coming home fifth. Looked like he was odds on going to win in Bahrain at the next race, but an unfortunate problem that he had with the engine late in the race really cost him his shot at victory there. He ended up finishing on the podium, and that was one of those disappointing weekends of Ferrari, because Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, they had a bit of a battle going on there. Sebastian came off worse for that, and then had a bit of a problem with his front wing, which managed to shake itself off of the car by the time he got back to the pits, and it was points lost. Sebastian ended up finishing fifth, and Charles only hanging on to third position in that one due to the fact that there was a very late safety car, because both the cars of Nico Hülkenberg and Danny Ricciardo, the two Renaults, expired almost at the exact same moment late in the race, which was absolutely crazy and I think unprecedented. But what we've seen from Charles, I think, is impressive what he's done. I mean, obviously the number of podiums that he has. I mean, in a race he hasn't actually finished lower than fifth, so I mean, that's what you would expect, I think. I mean, he's pretty close to his teammate and the number of points. So I mean, Ferrari sitting very nicely in the world championship in the constructor side, I should say. But we've seen at times some issues that maybe you might expect from a younger driver. And I think that the perfect example of that was the crash that he had in Q2 in Azerbaijan when he put it into the wall, just in that really tight, narrow, twisty section at the castle there. And I think Charles himself, even from that time, said something over the radio to the effect of, I'm so stupid. A little bit hard on himself, but obviously there is a lot of room to go or grow. And I think that we've seen just the raw pace and the talent that Charles has. And I think it really is a shame the fact that the SF90 just is not as competitive as preseason testing really suggested. And it's been a real disappointment once we've gotten to racing right from day one. This low downforce model, sure, it's great and it's fast in a straight line, but in when you need the downforce and when you need the grip going through the corners, it just is not on a par with probably even the Red Bull, which is going to be its next closest competitor. And obviously it's at arm's length from the Mercedes. And it was really evident in Hungary a couple of weeks ago that you had Max and Lewis scrapping it out of the front, Hungary being a perfect track to kind of level some of the performance advantage that Mercedes has and over the other teams. And it was a pretty good battle between Max and Lewis, but the Ferraris just so much further behind. And I thought it was a good result for Sebastian Vettel, and basically that was due to the strategy that he had for a second pit stop and having newer, fresher, softer tires than his teammate Charles Leclerc, was able to pass him late in the race. But certainly a very, very disappointing 2019 so far for Ferrari. And the question has to be, before we go into break here, will Ferrari win a race in 2019? They've had some opportunities, and they've had one taken away from them, as we talked about with Sebastian Vettel in Canada. But based on what we've seen so far, it's a great question. I honestly can't say, and based on what we've seen, probably not. Anyways, time for a quick break here on Scuderia F1, and we're going to just step away from a brief word from our sponsor, so please don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here on the Overtime Media Network. We're counting down 10 of our top 10 stories of the Formula One season so far. So we counted down the top three so far in the first segment of the show. So we're going to go on to the next batch here, and I've entitled this one "Red Bull plus Max plus Honda equals future title winners?" Question mark. And sure, why not? And I think it was very interesting the way that this whole, I guess you could call it a saga, because the way that Red Bull made the decision in 2018 to switch from Renault Power to Honda for 2019 was, in effect, a saga. It went on for a very, very long time, and Horner was very, very critical about the Renault engines and the power and the deficit that they had, basically going back all the way to 2014. I mean, they were dominant pre-turbo hybrid era, and winning a number of world championships and constructors' championships. I mean, Sebastian Vettel winning 4 championships as a Red Bull driver, and it just has not or did not work for them in the turbo era. They were clearly behind Mercedes, but mostly everybody else was, but really became apparent that they were behind even Ferrari as well, as Ferrari slowly but surely got better and better and better, because you always know that the Red Bull is going to have a good car. They're going to have a good chassis. They have one of the best guys in the history of Formula One in Adrian Newey. So you know that the design of the car is going to be solid. You know that the car is going to handle well. So it really was, I think, quite frustrating for them that all the success that they had pre-turbo hybrid era just wasn't there. The performance and the power wasn't there in the new era. And Christian Horner was very vocal and outspoken about that for a good number of years, basically to the point that that last year, before they made the switch, and even afterwards, that Cyril Abiteboul, the team principal and the head honcho at Renault, said that basically Christian had been complaining so much that they'd all completely tuned him out. But of course, having the benefit of the whole bizarre split scenario that you had with McLaren and Honda, and trying to keep Honda in F1, and the whole switch of Renault engines to McLaren, and then Honda power to Toro Rosso, with Sauber being mentioned in the mix at one point for getting Honda engines, which of course never happened. It really was an interesting situation to watch unfold, that you had Honda engines in Red Bull's junior team and Toro Rosso. Honda engines and Toro Rosso, Renault's in the Red Bull team themselves, and basically having a good portion of the 2018 season to really evaluate the two and the try before you buy, because they made the announcement in June, right around the time of the Canadian Grand Prix, that they were going to switch to Honda power for 2019. And it was a big step. It was a big announcement, and Honda obviously struggled quite a bit in those first several years back in Formula One with McLaren. We'll talk a little bit about McLaren in a few minutes here, but they had lots of issues, and I thought it was a big gamble both for Red Bull and also for Honda, and Honda, to their credit, said that they were going to make sure and do their best that for 2019 that Red Bull were going to be, or basically give them the performance and the reliability that that they would have had they stuck with Renault engines. And I think despite the struggles that Pierre Gasly has had, Max has had a pretty good season. He made the claim earlier this spring that he felt that that Honda and Red Bull would be in the position roughly in the summertime to contend and win races. And I thought it was I wouldn't say an outright boast, but I thought it was an interesting claim and an assertion for Max, because he seemed pretty confident and pretty secure in the fact. And they've delivered. It was impressive what Max did in Austria to win that race. I mean, he was in that final half of the race, second half of the race. He clearly had the best package out of everybody on the track, and the way that he made the Mercedes and the Ferraris look like they were standing still, and the way he barged his way through Charles Leclerc to go on and to win that race was something else. But that really leads the question, leads into the question, are they on the same level that they were last year with Renault? I think that we can honestly say yes at this point. If anything, they might be a little bit ahead, even though they've only got 2 races to their name. But certainly, I think that the teamwork and the synergy that Red Bull and Honda have, designing the car and the engine to work together and really fit together as one package, really is a smart way to do it. And it really seems to be a partnership that's working well. And I think getting these couple of wins and Max having the season that that he's had so far, I mean, he's done very, very well. I mean, he hasn't finished lower than fifth. He hasn't retired as well at all this year. He's had a number of podiums, two wins, a second place, and a couple of thirds, and a fourths and fifths here and there. I mean, they're all decent results. I mean, and let's not forget that in Monaco, he probably would have finished a little bit higher. I mean, Lewis won that race. Sebastian Vettel came second, and Valtteri Bottas came third. Max probably would have been on the podium had he not had to serve that 5-second time penalty for the little nudge that he gave Valtteri Bottas as a result of an unsafe release in the pits, and the stewards finding them in contravention, you know, of the safety rules, and judge that it was an unsafe release from his pits pit stop, and rightly so. It was a bit dodgy. However, it was exciting to see him try and chase down Lewis Hamilton, and he never did get by, even though he had one serious look. But it really looks to me that if Honda can continue on the trajectory that they are and continue to develop and get better and better, why not? Will they be able to close that that gap between themselves and Mercedes? That really is a very good question. They've been able to close the gap between themselves and Ferrari, and Red Bull and Ferrari are a match any day of the week now, any race, and it's pretty much between them. And I mean, I think out of Verstappen, Vettel, and Charles Leclerc, yeah, I'm probably going to go with Max Verstappen. He's got all the characteristics that you want in a guy that's going to be a top driver in Formula One. He's a potential world champion. Whether he'll ever be able to do that remains to be seen, but why not? If Red Bull and Honda can continue to do the things that they're doing, why can they not go back to winning world championships? I think it's very, very possible. I mean, the big question, of course, is whether or not they'll be able to keep Max Verstappen there after 2020 when his contract is up. Christian Horner seems to feel fairly relaxed about it at the moment. Of course, that can change. And, if Mercedes... I mean, I honestly have a hard time picturing Max wearing the scarlet of the of Ferrari, but it could happen. But if either of those two teams drove a dump truck full of money up to Max Verstappen's house and put it on his driveway, anything can happen. I mean, it is professional sports. It is the top tier of motor racing in the world. There's a lot of money involved, and who knows if another team comes in and makes a play and gets Max Verstappen to go and drive for them. It's not beyond the realm of possibility, but just like it's not beyond the realm of possibility that he could stay with Red Bull and do important things and big things there as well with Honda Power. So I guess the best thing that we could say is watch this space and see what happens over the next couple of years. Anyways, moving on to number 5, Renault are going nowhere fast. And this is kind of, I could have done 5 and 5A, but this is going to lead into a second discussion. But after finishing 4th in the World Championship last year, they are currently languishing in the bottom half of the Constructors' Championship with 39 points. They've had a couple of races with double DNFs, Bahrain being one, even though Danny Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg were both eventually classified 17th and 18th because they did end up completing more than 90% of the race. They both retired for various reasons in the crazy German Grand Prix, but Ricciardo just not having a very great year, and Nico Hülkenberg not really having a great year either. It's been just a lot of times out of the points, not making it through the various rounds of qualifying. And honestly, I have to admit, I'm really disappointed to see the lack of progress with Renault over the past, I would say, the 18 to 24 months. And I think obviously when they came back into Formula One a couple of years ago after they took over Lotus, that of course the first year back it was going to be a Lotus with a Renault paint job and a Renault badge on the nose. I mean, that was obvious. I mean, they came in pretty late in the winter, in the off season, to make that deal and get back into Formula One. So that was a bit of a foregone conclusion that it was just going to be a rebadged, rebranded Lotus. And I really thought that you would see some progressive steps forward slowly but surely, and sort of kind of we did. I mean, they kind of went from the back of the pack, the lower realms of the Formula One grid, and have kind of climbed their way up to mid table, and that's pretty much where they stayed. I mean, last year they had their moments, but this year, I mean, it's just been really, really disappointing to watch and see where they've been. I mean, if you look at in the Drivers' Championship right now, Nico Hülkenberg in 14th. I mean, his best finish so far. He's managed to get a 7th place on 2 occasions. And then you look at Danny Ricciardo, he's up in 11th. I mean, Danny's got 3 retirements to his name. I mean, he's got a whole bunch of really sad looking results here. And Ricciardo, his best finish to date with Renault has been a 6th. I mean, this is a guy that was a regular podium finisher and a race winner over the past couple of years with Red Bull, and finishing 4 retirements this year. His lowest classification was in Hungary a couple of weeks ago at with 14 points. I mean, 22 points for Danny Ricciardo in the Drivers' Championship, and 17 for Nico Hülkenberg. Like I say, I mean, they are now 39 points for the season in the Constructors' Championship. And I mean, that to me is kind of shocking. I mean, last year they basically were the best of the rest behind Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull. But this year, I mean, not only are they behind the resurgent McLaren, who currently sit 4th with 82 points, which is really, really good for what they've done this year. And then they're even fallen behind Toro Rosso, which Alexander Albon and Danny Kvyat have had some pretty good races this year. I mean, Danny Kvyat getting their first podium in donkey's years in Germany a couple of weeks ago, of course, aided by the rain. But Kvyat quitting himself pretty good. I mean, he's had a number of top 10 finishes. I mean, Alexander Albon has had a couple of top 10 finishes as well, but he's also had a number of retirements as well, so that kind of obviously hampers what he could have done. I mean, Kvyat and Albon currently sitting 9th and 15th in the World Championship, respectively. But still, I mean, it's been a decent run for them, and to be in front of Renault, I think, is very, very impressive. Alfa Romeo, who sit 7th in the World Championship, that's a bit of a different story. But I would have thought, with all the resources and everything that they have at their disposal, that that Renault would be much further up in the World Championship than they are right now. And anyways, that leads into the next question. Did Danny Ricciardo make the wrong choice by going to Renault for 2019? We'll talk about this after this brief word from our sponsors. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All All right, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. We're counting down top 10 stories of the Formula One season so far. And we now move on to item number 6. Did Danny Ricciardo make the wrong choice by switching to Renault for 2019? And we talked about this briefly before the break here. It is basically just an extension of what we were just talking about, Renault. But Ricciardo currently sitting in 11th in the World Championship on 22 points. This is a guy that has finished in the top five or six of the past couple of years as a Red Bull driver, has won a number of races, and well, obviously, unless something extremely bizarre happens in the latter half of this year, I don't expect to see Danny Ricciardo either win a race or be on the podium, because Renault is just that much further behind everyone else, and it really is sad to see. I mean, they've said a whole bunch of things. You know, they have over 1,000 brake horsepower in the engine. You know, they've got they've increased their workforce. All these impressive things that that they keep throwing out there, but it just has not translated into success on the track. And despite some of the assertions, I think that Nico Hülkenberg said earlier that they're not really all that far off being able to put it all together and really string together some results, but yet they continue to struggle. So I can understand the reason why Danny Ricciardo might wanted to have switched to Renault from Red Bull. Obviously, Red Bull, whether they were going to go out and say it or not, is going to be built around Max Verstappen. I mean, as we've talked about a number of times on this program, Max Verstappen just has it. He's quick, he's aggressive, perhaps at times a little bit too much so, but he can really get everything that he needs out of the car. And I mean, we've seen him quick in dry conditions, extremely quick in wet conditions. I mean, go back to Brazil a couple of years ago, Max was just flying around guys and making them look like they were standing still and passing them on the wet parts of the circuit where you would think that he had no business passing. It was absolutely impressive at Interlagos back in, when was it, 2016, 2017. It was just, it was one for the record books. Anyways, I mean, the thing was that maybe even if they didn't come out and say that Max was going to be the guy, it just obviously was going to be one of those situations. Even if they went with sort of like a driver number 1A and 1B, the thing is, Max being Max and Ricciardo still being a very good Formula One driver, may have just always felt like he was going to be in Max Verstappen's shadow. So I could have seen the reason to go to Renault, and they must have made one hell of a sales pitch to get him to believe in the project and switch over there. But at the same time, I could see it happening, because despite all the problems and the disappointments that Red Bull had with Renault Power, Ricciardo was the one guy that never really came out and said anything critically in public anyways. Of course, Christian Horner had made lots of negative comments about Renault over the years, and well, if you go back about this time last year at the Hungarian Grand Prix, Max had a frustrating afternoon and made an expletive-laden tirade over race radio when his Renault engine expired. And Ricciardo never burned those bridges. And I have to admit that, as probably many of you did, I was caught completely off guard and by surprise when he made the announcement that he decided to switch to Renault for this year. But at the same time, I could see that the logic in doing so. You would expect that it was a team on the rise. You know, the workforce is growing, the budget was growing for 2019. They're a manufacturer who's had success in the sport, both as an engine supplier and as an outright manufacturer. I mean, Fernando Alonso won back-to-back world championships driving a Renault back in 2005 and 2006. So, I mean, they have the track record. So why would you not believe that it might be contrary? You might believe that it's a sort of a mid to long-term project. But they said when they came back into Formula One that this was going to be about, you know, a five-year project before that they were back challenging for podiums and perhaps race wins. And, well, we're already into that five-year window right now, and they've regressed since last year and perhaps even as far back as 2017. And obviously, Ricciardo's not old or over the hill by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he's only just turned 30 back on July 1st of this year. So, I mean, he's got time and on his side. But still, how many years is he going to want to put up with that? And if it doesn't work out with Renault, is there any way back for Danny Ricciardo? Where would he go from there? Would he be able to get back into one of the top teams, be it either, well, I mean, I guess you could use that old saying, you can never go home. I would struggle to see him going back to Red Bull, but I mean, Ricciardo being the likable guy that seems to be well-liked by his teammates and colleagues, I guess it could happen. I mean, it wouldn't be a huge surprise to me, but if that didn't work out, would he be able to sweet talk his way into, say, Ferrari or Mercedes at some time in the future? I don't know. That's a great question, and that's one we're going to have to keep an eye on over time. Anyways, moving on to the next one, number 7. Did Red Bull make a mid-season driver change again? And of course, we've seen this happen before back in 2016 after the ill-fated and unlucky Danny Kvyat, who had a really bad knack for driving into the back of Sebastian Vettel a couple of years ago in 2016, was demoted from Red Bull back to Toro Rosso after only a couple of Grand Prix. It was the incident that he had, that he drove into Sebastian Vettel at the start of the Russian Grand Prix at the Sochi Autodrome that year, which basically was the icing on the cake, and that's what sealed the deal for him, sent him back to Toro Rosso, sent Max Verstappen in the other direction, and it paid off for Max, who won his very first race in Formula One in his debut for Red Bull at the very next Grand Prix at Barcelona in Spain. And well, the rest of the story for Max has kind of been made it a no-brainer since then. I mean, what he's done has been absolutely phenomenal, but they've struggled this year, and not with Max Verstappen. Max obviously has done very, very well. I mean, currently third in the World Championship with his pair of wins has propelled him out of the outside of the top three into the top three. I mean, he's ahead of Sebastian Vettel on points now in the Drivers' Championship with 181, so he's almost 30 points ahead of Seb in that one, and again Charles Leclerc. I mean, he's had some good duels with Charles Leclerc. So the thing is that that's disappointing for Red Bull. I mean, you look, Max has got 181 points, and then you look at his former teammate Pierre Gasly, only 63 points to date. And Pierre Gasly, only two retirements on the year. He retired in Azerbaijan, and then also in Germany. But that was because he was run into by Alex Albon. He was still classified in 14th because he retired late in the race. But if you look at the amount or the places where he's finished in Australia, 11th and an 8th and a 6th, and then 6th again in Spain and 5th, and kind of these mid to low top 10 finishes. I mean, he's always been in the top 10 apart from Australia, but he just has not been able to score enough points consistently enough. I mean, he's done a little bit better since the French Grand Prix, his home race, in which he finished 10th. Since then, he had a 7th in Austria, 4th in Great Britain, and then a 6th in Hungary. And of course, the crash in Germany, which ruled him out at the end and put him down at 14th, like I said. But you would expect that, you know, that with the Red Bull, that you have a good car, one that's capable of scoring points on a consistent basis. And obviously, being over 100 points behind his teammate and just continuing to struggle has just not worked out for Red Bull, and also for Pierre Gasly. I also thought that it was an interesting comment, because we only had several weeks ago, back in July, when Dr. Helmut Marko and I believe even Christian Horner were saying that they weren't about to make a mid-season change and things like that. But yet they decided to do just exactly that. So Pierre Gasly is out at Red Bull due to the frustrating performance, and it really got off to a bad start for him because he basically was not able to score. He didn't get off to a good start, crashing and really destroying his car in preseason testing, and that really limited what they could do as a team for that that test session. And then he's really struggled to find any sort of consistency ever since. And like I said earlier, Danny Kvyat, who had been demoted the first time, has really had a pretty decent season so far. But if you look at Alexander Albon, who has now been promoted to Red Bull for the rest of the season, I think is an interesting concept. I think basically what Red Bull is doing is they're taking a look at which one of the three other drivers that they have in the system right now who will partner up next to Max Verstappen next year. So you have Pierre Gasly, you have Danny Kvyat, you have Alexander Albon. So Pierre Gasly has proven through the first dozen races of the year to have been inconsistent and struggle. Danny Kvyat, his previous history aside, and the fact that he sat a year out and was a reserve and a simulator driver Ferrari in 2018, he's a bit of a known quantity, because I feel that Danny Kvyat, having that year out, he's come back. He seems to be less of the torpedo, less of that that reputation that his nickname suggests. He seems a little bit more focused, a little bit more mature, a little bit of a better driver. So I think he's a little bit more of a known quantity. And I really kind of wonder what Danny Kvyat could do now at, you know, with several years of experience in Formula One and being a little bit older now, being a little bit more mature, would he be able to do a better job than Pierre Gasly has done this year? And I would argue yes. But I mean, on the flip side, you look at Alexander Albon, who's a rookie in Formula One. I mean, he's got five top 10 finishes so far. His best finish so far is a sixth, only one retirement, and then he's got half a dozen finishes outside the top 10. But why not? You know what you've gotten with Gasly. I think we all know what to expect from Danny Kvyat, and I think at the moment, unless Alexander Albon proves otherwise, or they come into a driver, some maybe unexpected situation, somebody to go there for next year, you would have to think that maybe Danny Kvyat is the one that might be favorite to take that seat in 2019. But I mean, all credit to, you know, let's not jinx Alexander Albon at all. I mean, he's got a great opportunity now to step up and really prove and show what he's capable of. I mean, obviously he hasn't been able to do quite as well as Danny Kvyat so far as at Toro Rosso this year, but I mean, the pair of them have done quite good to get the team up into fifth in the World Championship and the constructors' side. And it's a wonderful opportunity. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's going to do at Spa and through the rest of the races as we finish up the European season, then move on to Asia and then the Americas, and then finally on to the finale at Abu Dhabi. So certainly a situation to watch. All right, so we're going to just talk now a little bit about McLaren before we start to shut it down. And this has really, I think, been a refreshing scenario, a refreshing thing to see from McLaren this year. And it's been painful to watch. I mean, I grew up in an era watching McLaren Honda Power, watching Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost dominating Formula One. Then fast forward to the 90s when they had Mercedes Power and Mika Hakkinen and David Coulthard. And I mean, just some wonderful memories. And then even you move into the Kimi Raikkonen era. And then you move into the era of Lewis Hamilton, Jenson Button, and all the great memories and the impressive things that McLaren have done over the years. And then they've slowly tailed off. And obviously they've hit rock bottom over the past couple of years. And it really looked like once they switched to Honda, that I think we all had the expectation based on the history that they had, that this was going to be the second coming. This was going to be the situation or the partnership that they needed to get back to the top of Formula One, become a contender again. And boy, did that not end well. And they had to really pay big bucks to get out of that engine deal with Honda early. I can't remember now if it was $100 million or £100 million, whatever it is. it was a hell of a lot of money that that they spent to break that contract early when at the first opportunity. But they did it, and it seems to have worked out better for everyone. Maybe now you look at what Honda's done with Red Bull. Maybe there's the possibility that there might be a little bit of regret or on the McLaren side. But on the other hand, that despite all the issues they had, that a lot of things that were said, mostly by Fernando Alonso during the time that they were struggling, was that it wasn't the drivers, it wasn't the car, it was just the engine. But subsequently, I think that it was proven that that the cars that they were designing just weren't as good as that they were saying, and it just wasn't all the drivers, it wasn't all the engine, it wasn't all the chassis, it was all a combination thereof. And I think that they had to face the reality and come to terms with that, and I think that despite the problems and the struggles that they have had, I think that they've come to terms with that, and I think that despite being sort of an expensive way to do it, has been a good thing for them. And I think you have to give some props to Zach Brown. I mean, he's come in, and I think slowly but surely and quietly, I think that he's done a good job of assembling a good team there. I mean, out are the likes of Eric Boullier, who was the big the top gun there for a while, and then slowly he brought in James Key, who was now the technical director and who was over at Toro Rosso before, and he brought in Jill DeFerrin, of course, is well known here in North America for what he did all those years in IndyCar, and he's the sporting director. And then most recently, he brought in Andreas Seidel to be the new team principal, and he's got a very impressive resume in motor racing, and was most recently the head of the Porsche LMP1 project. And slowly but surely, they've had a good season, and I was a little bit skeptical. I'll be the first one to admit it, when they said last year that they were going to come into 2019 with a driver pairing of Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris. Carlos, for me, I think he's a good driver, maybe a little bit unproven, maybe some question marks there. I mean, he's still a fairly young guy. And Lando Norris, again, young driver, unproven quantity. But what they've done so far, I think, is fairly impressive. I mean, they're currently in fourth in the world championship. Lando has unfortunately had a number of retirements. I mean, you look where he is, 10th currently in the drivers championship. I mean, like I say, he's got a number of retirements going back to China, to Spain, to Canada, in Germany. But at the same time, we've seen some impressive things from him. I mean, we see them, they're pretty fairly regulars, making it through to the top 10 shootout in Q3. Norris, I think, really proved what he was made of when he had hydraulic issues, I believe it was, at the French Grand Prix, and was able to hang on. And despite dropping down a little bit, I think he was due much more than the ninth place that he eventually managed to come home with. I mean, he still finished in the top 10, and I think that was a really impressive result to still get to. Get some points out of it, despite a car that was literally falling apart underneath him. So he's been a bit of a revelation. I think his 24 points on the season so far, I think that seems about right. But if maybe he had a little bit of luck in some other situations and things have worked out a little bit different, that he should have some more points in that. I mean, he's had a number of top 10 finishes. I mean, the times that he hasn't retired, for whatever reason, he only has three finishes outside the points. So if he the car is reliable, he doesn't have any problems, then the odds are that Lando Norris is going to finish in the points. And Sainz, I think, also has done pretty good as well. I mean, he had a bit of a tough start to the year, retired in Australia, retired in Bahrain, and then since then he's only had two finishes outside of the top 10, and he's had two fifth positions in the last two races in Germany and Hungary, and that was on the back of a sixth and an eighth and another sixth. And he's been a pretty pretty regular face in the top 10 this season, and I think what they've done is has been a very solid job. And I think it's really, really quite important, and I think it's good to see McLaren back in the points more regularly, to see them in the top 10 shootout. How much work that they have to do now to get back from kind of the best from the rest and get up to that level of Red Bull and Ferrari and be another factor, another piece of the puzzle in contending for podiums. I mean, it would be one thing to be challenging Red Bull and Ferrari for a podium. It'd be another thing to be challenging for race wins. But we've seen with Red Bull this year that if the circumstances are right, they have been able to challenge Mercedes heads on. So maybe that's a hint of things to come. But certainly, I'm not going to put the cart before the horse. Let's just give props to McLaren for the job that they've done so far this year. And we look forward to see what they can do for the rest of the season. Anyways, time for one final break and then two more top 10 storylines for this year. And then it's going to be time to shut it down. You're listening to Scuderia F1, the podcast that is always up to speed here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We will be right back. All right, well, there are finally a couple of last talking points that I wanted to discuss before we wrap it up for this week. And the first one is out with the old and in with the new, and that is just more of a reference of what we're going to see on the calendar in terms of tracks for 2022. They've actually committed for a 22 race schedule, according to Toto Wolff, team principal at Mercedes, what he was saying a week or two ago when that made news, that 22 seems to be about the limits that that they can logistically handle over the course of an entire season, just in the terms of manpower and everything like that. So it's going to be great from that point of view. I have to admit that last year when we had those three races in 3 weeks, was at France, Great Britain, and Germany, I thought it was absolutely wonderful. I know that it must be a hell of a lot of work for all the people in the teams, for the mechanics, for the logistical people, for the people back in the factory, for the engineers, for the drivers, everyone, to pull off three races in 3 weeks. And it's a huge undertaking, and kudos to everyone in Formula One for pulling that off. But hey, I thought it was great. I thought it was wonderful entertainment. And if you throw it together with all the things that typically are going on in the sporting world in the summer anyways, and last year you threw in the FIFA World Cup, I mean, there was not too many moments when I was walking away from the TV. It was either the World Cup, Formula One, baseball, the Tour de France, you name it. I mean, there was always something to watch. And definitely it was a scenario of my cup runneth over. But anyways, I digress. So what I mean about out with the old and in with the new, you know, there's still the ongoing discussions with some tracks about, you know, who's going to be on the calendar for next year and who's not. I mean, we've heard that that we might lose Spain, we might lose Mexico, we might lose Silverstone. Some of these tracks have firmed up deals. I thought Mexico was an interesting one because it sounded like that one being so heavily subsidized by government sounded like that was not going to happen. Subsequently, it's been confirmed for 2021. Silverstone has signed a new deal. Spain sounds like that's going to be keep going again. So the only one that's really out there hanging at the moment is Hockenheim, which has kind of been on again, off again over the past couple of years. And honestly, I don't know. I'm not really a big fan of the new Hockenheim. I mean, this year it was fun to watch, and even last year, to an extent. I mean, there were some rain showers which made it interesting. I mean, certainly not like the torrential downpour that we had a couple of weeks ago. But to me, it's just not quite the same as the old Hockenheim. But I've been there, not for Formula One, for DTM. And while it was great when the cars would come out of the forest into the stadium section, as soon as they went through that right-hander at turn one, they'd disappear into the woods for a couple minutes and not come back. So, I mean, if you're in the stands watching it live, not really the most exciting thing. I mean, it was a little bit better on TV, but I guess in this day and age, you know, it's a safety thing as much as it is anything else. I just I'm not a big fan of just the layout of the track as it is, but hey, that's just me. But what it comes down to for me really is a real mix. I think that, and I think I've mentioned a number of times on the podcast, not just this year, but there has to be a good mix of tracks. There has to be the historical venues, which Liberty Media say that they're committed to. I mean, Formula One to me is not Formula One without tracks like Silverstone, Spa, Monza, even a German Grand Prix. I mean, I'm more partial to the Nürburgring, but that's maybe more of an emotional connection that I have because I went to go and watch the 2001 European Grand Prix, so sort of the height of Schumacher mania. Other tracks that I'd love to see included are the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka. More than Fuji, I like the layout of Suzuka better. I also like, obviously, for personal reasons, the Canadian Grand Prix. I'm a big fan of that. It's always nice to have a Grand Prix in your own country, albeit a couple thousand miles from where I sit right here. It's still good to have. I mean, it's better for Kevin because, I mean, he's literally just, a stone's throw away from Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. But you have to balance it with new tracks. And honestly, I like I like Azerbaijan at the Baku City Circuit. It for a street circuit, I think it has some interesting characteristics. That tight, twisty section around by where the castle is. Charles Leclerc might not like it, but I sure do. From a fan's perspective, I love the long straightaway at start finish. I think it really makes for some spectacular overtaking. Just watching them fly down there. I can't remember exactly how long it is. I'm not sure if I think it may be. I know it's one of the longest. I can't remember now if it is the longest straightaway in Formula One. I know it's right up there. But anyways, it's a spectacular bit of track to watch. Monaco is an important one, I think, just from a historic point of view. But I do like to see the inclusion of new tracks. Vietnam is going to be interesting. Certainly would like to see if some of these discussions that they're having. Sounds like Miami may be starting to come back on the radar again, although it sounds like there are significant issues that they need to sort out there to pull that one off. I mean, there have been talks about maybe a race somewhere in and around London. So I think it's kind of cool. I think that there is a balance to be struck between the historic circuits and newer ones and some of the ones that have popped up along the way. Maybe not old and not new, and some that sort of come and then go over the years. So it is interesting as well, because I mean, Liberty said last year that they had something up to 40 venues that were interested in hosting a Grand Prix. And well, they never really released any names, but it is, I think, interesting at least to see this year that despite some of the insecurity or uncertainty around some of these tracks that were coming to the end of their terms, coming to the end of their contracts, are getting deals done and staying on the calendar, and they're able to add a race or two here and there. So it'll be interesting to see where they take it and if there will be any other races that drop off either this year or next year, and any other new ones that come in. Certainly, I think from my point of view, it'd be nice to see another one in North America. I love the Circuit of Americas. If they could add another one in Miami, I mean, I know Vegas has been thrown out there. Even New York was thrown out there. I think that the desire and I think the passion and the interest is definitely there in the United States. I mean, hey, to look at the stats for this show, the amount of listeners that we get, it's majority are Americans and in the United States by a massive proportion compared to everywhere else. And that's awesome. So I think just based on my numbers alone, and not that that means anything, but I think just joking aside, it would be cool to see a second race somewhere in the U.S. And finally, my last talking point of the evening is, what's up with 2021? What is happening once the Concorde Agreement expires at the end of 2020? Nobody really knows. There's been a lot ongoing in terms of discussions for a very, very long time. Things here and there have kind of trickled out, and it sounds like slowly, and let's emphasize the word slowly, that things are starting to get sorted out for the future of Formula One, what it's going to look like in 2021 and beyond, and the sooner the better. It sounds like from the last time I heard that it might get sorted out in the fall, in and around October. So whether or not that happens sooner rather than later, that remains to be seen. But certainly there are a number of issues that that Formula One need to sort out. And obviously the one of that is, well, the one that we want to see is more competitive, closer, more exciting and eventful racing, and how they do that. And if they can do that, that is the $64,000 question. And of course, the whole budget cap, the whole question about, you know, distribution of prize money and all that. There are so many things that that need to be taken into consideration. And Formula One being what Formula One is, there's obviously a lot of vested interests. There's obviously a lot of politics. And that's only just my take being on the outside. I mean, that's not even based on any inside information that obviously I don't have. But, you know, it is interesting, I think, that that despite the at least on the outside, the apparent lack of progress, that at least compared to some of the situations we've seen over the years, that we haven't had anybody outright threaten to quit Formula One and walk away. So at least from that point of view, I think it's interesting that that at least publicly, you know, all the stakeholders have been at least quiet on that front. What's been said behind closed doors is another thing. And also another thing that remains to be seen is also what they come up with, the new rules, the new regulations and everything in and around it. Will that drive more interest? Will it make Formula One a more suitable place to invest as either an engine supplier or as a new manufacturer? That that will be something that we'll have to shake out during the process as well. I mean, will we see the grid expand beyond 10 teams and 20 cars? Will we see any new engine suppliers come in? Will we see any new teams? I mean, that will, of course, be sorted out in time. And again, will the new regulations maybe become unattractive to some of the players that are involved right now and decide that Formula One's not a place for them to be, and not a place that they want to either supply engines or operate and run a team, and decide to fold their tent and go home? Anyways, guys, that was just a small selection of some of the stories that have kind of been on my mind over the recent days and weeks, and over the first several months of the 2019 Formula One World Championship. And it's by no means complete or exhausted or, authoritative version. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. Anyways, like I say, if you have any other points that you think that or other stories that should have been included, let me know. Love to hear from you guys. It's always good to hear from other Formula One fans. You can do so by sending me a tweet at ScuderiaF1 on the Twitters, and you can also send us an email at ScuderiaF1pod@gmail.com. And thank you all very much for listening. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the reviews and ratings we get on Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. It really means a lot to us, and it helps grow the show, so it really is important. And that's it. That's a wrap. Enjoy the rest of the Formula One summer break. We'll be back this time next week, and until then, thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Ciao.
For listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast.
If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1pod.com.
Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1pod@gmail.com.